Bagel Tech Big, the weekend show from the Bagel Tech Network with me, Ewan Rankin, and my esteemed group of guests who are going to join me this evening. Top left to start off with, Mr. James Hart. Hello, mate. How are you doing?
Good evening. I've been up north all week, so I'm talking a bit like that.
Oh, jolly.
Been in Manchester.
Oh, dear. What took you to Manchester, mate?
They are opening a new BBC building up there, and I was just making sure it was working properly.
What, the whole building?
Your sole responsibility.
Pretty much, yeah.
James Hart, building fixer.
There was a man with a very squeaky wheelbarrow that ruined almost every single phone call everybody made. He was just going back and forth with his squeaky wheelbarrow.
Why is there a wheelbarrow in an office?
They're still fitting it out. They need to put stuff in. It's a very effective way to get things from one place to another, a wheelbarrow. Don't underestimate
it. I'm not doubting it, but if you're talking about office chairs, I wouldn't have thought so anyway. Next to him, we've got brand new audio equipment, Sarah Jane. Hello, missus.
Hello. Where the devil are you?
Brand new mic. Sounds good.
Yes, good.
And you've pressed the deflutter switch and it's no longer fluttering.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We're definitely defluttering.
Jolly good.
Sorry.
Fresh still from his quake experience, and I was there, was the earthquake this afternoon during the Max show for Carl Swagger. Hello, mate.
Ah, good evening to you. How are you?
Any further reports of damage, old boy?
No, a piece of foam kind of came out undone from the wall over here. Other than that, everything's good.
Right, because I got a tweet from a couple of people who follow me in the Philippines since you're on the show and stuff, and they said, no, you're talking rubbish. There was no earthquake here. I said, I saw the mic. Unless Kyle was playing an April Fool on us and wobbling the desk.
No. There was tiny. It had to be like a two. Very small.
All right, okay. So at least you're all right, mate. And last again, but by no means least, Eric Lanigan.
Hey, guys. Hey, you, mate. How's everybody.
Good week.
Yeah, pretty good. Kind of a slow news week, but other than that, it's been decent.
No kidding. Nothing to take the piss out of at all, unfortunately.
Oh, we'll find something, don't worry.
So, what's happened? Eric Schmidt has left the kids in charge. He stepped aside and let Larry Page take over as CEO. No word on Sergey there, but apparently the three of them are still going to be taking their decisions together. The Nintendo 3DS has been passed by a Cambridge doctor as not being seriously harmful to eyes. And also, what else? Steve Ballmer said he was going to shelve plans for retail stores. There's a bit of a spat between Best Buy and Apple that looks like it's going on, but it is and it isn't, it is and it isn't. And the Motorola Zoom is going to shift a maximum of 100,000 units, they reckon, which is one third of the total sales of the Apple iPad 1 on day one. And the other topic, which has picked up a bit of interest, is Interpol wanting to have a global identity card system. So, where should we start? We start with something light and easy. Microsoft stores are now officially kind of dead meat.
It's like an oxymoron. They don't belong together.
Apple and stores, yes, but Microsoft and stores, no. Why not?
How many did they open in the end?
They've got eight.
Two.
Eight, no, they have eight. Two. Yeah, Apple have got over 300.
Yep.
And Microsoft have got eight. There's eight. None anywhere there's, else apart from the US.
There's your answer right there.
Why? But why is there only eight?
I think, in all seriousness, it's the demarcation, isn't it? Apple is fantastic at consumer side. Microsoft's is best at business, and it's not really suited to your retail outlets, is it?
You do. You imagine you take your kids into the Microsoft store, and they just go, boring, it's PowerPoint.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, it may be difficult to generate that kind of interest and rapport with consumers. They also may have been at odds with what vendors' products they should stock, because obviously they don't really sell any of their own hardware, whereas the Apple Store is a showcase, a gallery for everything that Apple makes.
Kind of. Well, they do the Xbox 360 and the Kinect, and obviously a load of software, but absolutely what you run it on. Microsoft, do they still do the Zoom? The Microsoft phone thing?
The Zoom's going to go, isn't it?
It hasn't. The Zoom's dying.
They just killed it, I think.
Phone 7? It's kind of like a crap version. It's like an Asda Smart Price Apple store, isn't it?
That's one way of putting it.
Well, it's like, point?
Hold on, I couldn't hear that. What was it?
It's just like a cheap version of an Apple store. It's like the
Well, yeah.
It's the Lidl.
The Lidl.
Old.
Lidl of the computer retail world.
No, I mean, is the problem that just the fact that, that Microsoft don't sell consumer electronics particularly?
Yeah.
They sell one consumer electronic.
There's no wow factor there with Microsoft. I mean, oh boy, look on the shelf, Windows 7.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I'm no Apple lover, as I know as everyone's saying, but you know, Apple is way better suited to, you know, consumer goods. That they have that wow factor, as Carl says.
What that actually means is Sarah Jane is just annoyed that there aren't any Linux stores out there.
Ubuntu.
What's in the Linux store? Can I have one of those stuff? Can I have one of those stuffed penguins, Dad, or a red
hat?
Help
yourself. It's all free.
Is that free? Yeah. Can I? I'll take two of those. Thanks,
Dad. I want one of those. Can I have an ounce of Ubuntu?
I wonder, do you think with Microsoft, could it be a branding problem that they don't have? I wonder, is it almost like for regular consumers who are not businesses who are buying in bulk and doing these big enterprise scale services with them? Is it almost like walking through the mall and walking past like a MasterCard store? And it's like, what would be in there? You know, we're used to MasterCard being like an intermediary between what we want to do and what we do. And maybe for people, you know, Apple clearly is like a designer brand. People have the awareness around that. What do you think about that idea? That is almost like people just think, well, that's the default that came with my computer, but I don't really care that much about it or know much about what behind the Microsoft name is.
I will counter that, if I may, Eric, with the fact that in our local shopping center, there is a Virgin Media shop, and that they're a cable company. What are they selling? They're selling contracts for stuff. But the stuff they're selling is basically a shop window for their kind of non-existent, you know.
There's no consumer electronics to buy.
I've got no idea what they sell. And you go in there and ask something about your Virgin box at home, they'll just go, sorry, we just sell stuff.
They sell submarines now.
They sell submarines, exactly, yeah.
There's no Genius Bar in there.
No, quite the reverse, in fact.
There's an idiot
special
bar.
Needs bar. An idiot bar.
The dim dumb bar.
Special needs bar.
Special needs bar.
But actually, though, you bring up a good point about the Genius Bar. Maybe Microsoft felt they could not compete with that because people love the service that they get with the Genius Bar. They can take in their product. They can often fix it or swap it right on the spot. Whereas with Microsoft, it's much more difficult both to train the employees and to figure, you know, how do they provide hardware support when they don't manufacture the hardware?
That's a good point, Eric.
I think they
can't just switch it out with one that one with you know, another laptop they've got under the counter.
Does this go back to the fundamental point that when you were looking at the Mac versus PC adverts that were coming out from Apple, PC had the opportunity to walk away, and Windows could go, you know, when Bill Gates was asked, what do you think to the Mac versus PC adverts? Obama, they could go, well, I don't get it because we don't make computers. You know, we just make an OS. And by the way, ROS runs power stations, submarines, you know, I don't get it. You know, we don't do stuff that just looks nice. And they could have absolutely killed that program straight away at the start. But, you know, that little silence that they kept where they didn't mix it up. And then Barmer's come on and tried to fight Apple and take them on head to head. And it's a lost cause before they even start because they never were the same type of company to start with. Yes, no?
Yeah.
You know, no, it's completely correct, yeah.
You know how Apple sort of embraces with like, you know, when they got the Beatles catalog, I mean, they actually put up billboards, you know, that just showed the like photographs of the Beatles. And then it just said Apple or like now on iTunes and stuff. You know, they were using the Beatles, the what do they say in advertising? The borrowed identification, the borrowed interest to sort of use the ethos of the Beatles to describe Apple, which is sort of anti-corporate, kind of, whereas Microsoft, in that 60s, 70s sense of being corporate, you know, Microsoft is 100% corporate in everything they do except for that Xbox division, whereas Apple is the opposite. They simply don't even make that kind of corporate and enterprise software.
No, exactly.
And it's funny. I was going to say, it's funny Eric mentions Xbox because that is the only thing consumer product wise. I mean, yeah, fine. The world runs on Windows. But when it comes to having that Apple vibe, the only one that's got it is the Xbox division over at Microsoft. That's it.
Yeah, that's the only consumer electronic really that they hold apart from the Zoom, which is totally US centric.
which is probably actually saved the company's lunch.
And they've already got a store in the mall that does the Xbox. It's called GameStop.
That's right.
I mean, it's the other thing that the influence of Google into the tablet market and that kind of stuff, and especially the Chromium OS, they've got an increased squeezing pressure now because they've got Apple on the one side, they've got Google with Android and Chrome on the other side pushing them, and they're kind of thinking, well, what's the point? We don't have consumer electronics. That's a logical issue. And then B, you know, this market is only going to get smaller. We had dominance, and when you're 100% of the market effectively, you know, 98% of the market effectively, you know, sort of 6 to 8 years ago, that's only got one way it can go.
You kind of wonder why they bothered putting shops in the first place, really, don't you?
Yeah, why start with 8?
Effort.
Why bother starting with 8?
Yeah. I think it was just an answer to Apple. Really, well, Apple's got them, maybe we should too. And then they got to 8 and realized, oh crap, there's still stuff on the shelves here from 2003. So
yeah, maybe this isn't working. Let's face it, guys, it didn't take us more than a couple of minutes to think about why that idea for Microsoft doesn't work. You'd have thought that somebody at Microsoft would have actually thought, hey, why are we bothering doing this?
That would be nice.
That's the moral of the entire story. Everything that comes out of Microsoft, you say, well, you'd think someone there would have thought of that. Yeah, <exactly. laughs> would have realized that was a bad idea.
It's got chocolate teapot written all over it, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's almost like, oh, well, we'll do it just because Apple do it.
Yeah.
Until they can figure out how to make a product that will get people lining up 4 blocks around a store or a single location, they can't open a retail chain. Because they don't know what their rallying cry is. They don't know what the marketing message is that would generate that kind of consumer interest.
I think the same could be said for Google, though. You know, they come up with an idea and nobody just goes, whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, when people start to use that, that's going to really make them cross. So I think Apple have just got that sort of secret formula where they can get the hype machine going. And Google could learn a lot from it, I think. I don't think we're going to be seeing any Google shops anytime soon.
No, not at all.
But, you know,
maybe online.
Shops. So I didn't hear that.
Maybe online. I was going to say, maybe online. We'll have the Google Store online.
They have the web app store. They've got the Android Market. They've got Google Books. They've got lots of Google stores, actually.
Yeah.
Amazon?
Just no brick and mortar.
Amazon is owned by Google, is it? Is something you're not telling us?
No, Amazon's selling Android apps. I was just making a bit of a dig, really.
Oh, and very well, apparently. We've also then got this week. Where's the story gone? I've lost the blubby story.
That's how important
the Motorola it was. Zoom. Motorola Zoom shifting 100,000 units. Is this a failure before it even starts?
Well, it isn't getting off to a good start, is it?
It's not, no. 100,000 units is the expected total sale value. That's one third of the total first day sales of the Apple iPad 1.
I think considering the number of other tablets that there are actually out there in the market at the moment, rather than those that have been announced against the iPad, that's terrible.
It's a terrible statistic.
You think that...
The Juju's probably done better.
Yeah.
Oh...
The thing that amazes me, I mean, I've not actually held one and played with one, but from what I've seen of it, considering the you know, how long it is since the first iPad was actually launched, you'd kind of think it would be a lot slicker and stuff than even the first iPad. No, it's actually worse than the first iPad from what I've seen.
Eric, you've been to CES. Have you had a play with this?
I did get to play with it. I forget. I think I got to hold it, but at that point, it was just using, it was just playing back videos. But I think somehow I've played with Honeycomb since then. I forget on what device. But the reviews unanimously said that it's like a beta device. The hardware feels beta. You know, it doesn't have the fit and finish of an iPad, especially iPad 2. It can't even compete on thinness. Can't compete on price. You know,
that price is disgusting.
That's the big thing right there.
Yeah. Price. I mean, it can't compete on price. It can't compete on software by the generous estimates put about 30 native apps for Honeycomb right now that take advantage of that form factor and screen and the capabilities of Honeycomb that don't just look like scaled up versions of phone applications. And it doesn't even have Flash. That was like the only other big thing that Android has going for it against the iPad. It still has a beta version of Flash. So far, it seems to be almost like a developer preview platform.
It does. I mean, the thing is as well, though, that the people that have used it said that they think it could be good enough to take on the iPad. But 100,000 units, it's just not going to get any kind of leverage whatsoever. It's the better of the tablets that's out there in trying to make competition. And, of course, in another 4 to 11 days, if there isn't another delay, you've got Playbook coming. Where's Playbook going to sit with all of this?
Yeah, unfortunately, when the Playbook comes out, it's going to resemble more like a early developer preview piece of hardware than the Zoom did. Because the latest I heard is that it's not even the Playbook is not even going to ship with the BlackBerry's flagship piece of software, the thing that they're most known for, which is very secure enterprise grade email client. Mm. It actually won't ship with that. It'll also ship with hardly any native applications. And the I think it was on this show we were talking a few weeks ago about how they were going to have an emulator that can run various Android apps as well as BlackBerry Java and other things. Those tools for developers won't even come out until the fall, or maybe they said the summer. Anyway, it was going to be a few months after the physical tablet hit stores.
Yeah, good point from Mac Jim in the chat room. Playbook may even still be delayed because of screen shortage as well on top of that. Right.
Mm. I think the Playbook should just be delayed indefinitely. We've been talking about this thing for how many months now? BlackBerry's been putting it out there for how many months now? We're still waiting for God only knows how many months now. Can it already? Well, it's already old before it's out.
It's been played out there just like a kid's movie for the holidays at Christmas, and they start touting it in April or February of that year. You know, it's got like a 9 to 12 month run into it, and the Playbook has been that long almost in coming to fruition, and now it's going to get here. It's twice as thick as the iPad. It hasn't got many applications for it, like you said, Eric. It's not running the enterprise stuff that really would hook the rest of the BlackBerry market in, who are already starting to probably look at iPads or have got iPads to begin with. You know, is this going to emerge into an empty room, effectively, as far as customers are concerned?
Especially, imagine just if the last thing they did was, you know, this summer to announce that they have if they could beat BlackBerry to the tablet market with the same enterprise grade whatever, whether it's the ability to lock down the functionality of the device, better remote wipe and remote management capabilities, more secure email. If they beat them by months and months to the market with just that stuff for the tablet, they would lock up the enterprise market. There'd be nothing left for BlackBerry.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, Aaron made a good point in the chat room. What about the HP touchpad as well? It's just there's so much promised, and when it gets delivered, it's just not going to... It's rubbish. It's just... Why don't you pull yourselves together? Should we just make ourselves a nice sort of touchscreen tablet thing? We'll just knock something up over the weekend and release it, because I'm sure it'll be better than that lot.
I'll make it out of plywood, and then it's got a real wood feel to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The bagel tab.
That's right.
We could bake it. Go on, Sarah. You're about to say something sensible.
I was just going to say, I know I mentioned this briefly in the chat room during the Mac show earlier, but this whole tablet market thing just it makes me so angry, because I think, well, apart from Apple, what the hell is everybody else playing at?
That really pisses you off, doesn't it, that no one's taking
really
it on Apple?
It really off, because there's, you know me, it's like, you know, the first decent tablet that comes along that I can run Android on, then I'm going to go out and buy it.
You're sitting there in the playground going, fight, 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 and no one's coming forward.
I can't believe that all these manufacturers out there are letting Apple tie this up.
Well, you could reverse the question the other way. Maybe these manufacturers are just going, how the hell are Apple doing this? They've released two generations of their tablet, and we haven't done one yet.
I accept the fact that maybe... you know, everybody else was caught napping at the start. But come on, guys, we're over a year into this, and you're telling me that if Apple can do this, you're not telling me they were developing this for years and years and years before.
Maybe.
They might have been developing the concept, but for God's sake, it doesn't take that long for these guys to catch up. And everyone that's come along has just completely ballsed it up in some way, shape, or form.
It's too hard.
What it's come down to is that Steve Jobs has got a whole pile of Oompa Loompas in the basement at Cupertino, and they're making these things, and all they're getting paid for is they're getting paid for it in fruit. And that's it.
Yeah, but it's not even about cost. You know, I mean, we were talking about the Zoom earlier on. You know, it's worse.
That's all about
and
cost.
It's more expensive.
So it is about cost.
If somebody could come along with a tablet that was more expensive but looked as good as the tablet, at least it would be reasonably viable.
I'll tell you the thing that baffles me is how they're able to how they were able to get that. You know, there was that video that was on all over YouTube, the 4 blocks long line wrapping around the London Apple store for a product that you can get in the mail. You could pre-order in other ways, or, you know, get it a few days later. And what do you even still do? What do you do with it? I don't, you know, what are most people even doing with tablets? The last I heard before all the iPad 2 hype, people had kind of put their iPads aside and picked up the MacBook Airs and said, well, now I can get some real work done. I wonder how much of this really is just master marketing, master brand awareness. It's this conspicuous consumption, you know, people buying them without even having a need for them. They don't know what they're going to do with them until they get home.
Well, that was always the thing, though, wasn't it, with Apple? There was that Mickey type thing of the Apple Orb that was just a circular thing with no buttons on it, but you had to have it. And there was a video that was on YouTube, did arounds long before the iPad came out, and it was just about the fact that Apple made stuff that looked so cool, you just wanted to have one.
Yeah.
And if you look at you're saying about the lines of people going 4 blocks around the Apple store in London, the big problem you had there was if you ordered online, you still don't have what you ordered. When it came online for online ordering the day before, you placed your order and you were only guaranteed on the first person who ordered was guaranteed on the 12th or the 19th of April. So, you know, there was no pre-delivery that arrived on day one like there was with Apple iPad 1.
I'm guessing none of us have got iPads. Ewan?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, I use it a lot. I use it an awful lot.
You've got the iPad 1?
Yeah, I've got some great programs. I think that's the key is I've found a couple of really good programs that fit in with the way that I work. So I use Synotes an awful lot because if I get an idea or if I've got something that I can have a series of pads set up, I write a note down and it instantly syncs with the cloud. So it then pops up on my iPhone and then pops up on a desktop. So I can look at any note I've written or any meeting notes that I've taken in 3 locations all at the same time if I really
want to. It's like Evernote, isn't it?
It's not. It's more than Evernote than that because it's what it is. It's set up for note taking rather than just like Evernote seems to be about capturing a note or capturing an issue and it's a ticket on itself. Whereas this thing says, right, here's a ticket. And so you have one ticket for one meeting and then there's a series of stuff that you write and all of that syncs.
And you write with your fingers, you type using the onboard keypad.
Yeah, I've got an attachment keyboard as well that comes in the little prop stand and that's useful. And also as well, when I sit in hotels, if I want to watch catch up on TV shows and stuff like that. And the one thing that's actually interesting is what's made it come alive for me is Get iPlayer Automator, which is what steals the BBC iPlayer and puts it in your iTunes. So I go there, I've got everything that I want to watch. It automatically rips it down. It works like a PVR on my Mac here at home. I sync with my Mac once a week and I take it all away with me and I catch up on my TV shows in the week.
So what you've done is you've built an ecosystem around this piece of technology and you've tuned it to your, because it's versatile enough, and you've tuned it to your own needs. You could probably do that with an Android tablet, couldn't you?
Easily. Absolutely.
You could
easily
do that with an HP one, a Palm OS one.
There is nothing that I do with the iPad that the availability of applications and the functionality and the fact that I actually bought it would let me do that I don't do already.
Yeah, it was just because it was there first, I guess.
Yeah, it was the first tablet that came along that you looked and went, wow. And it worked. And, you know, I remember sitting on day one when I did my unboxing video for YouTube, you know, I played the shuffleboard game and it was like the puck was attached to the end of my finger. And then when I let go of the thing, it off it went. You know, it was that realistic. And the one game that I had with the Galaxy Tab on, and you moved the applications there backwards and forwards, even just the swipe to open it and stuff, it never felt like you were in contact of it. It was like it was controlling you. It was
so this is what
experience.
This is what the other tablet manufacturers almost have to do, like grab people with iPads and say, what is it you like about this? And then they do the same thing.
Tell us what you like. And they're like shaking the person.
Yeah, but
why did you buy this?
No, that's exactly what they're doing. And I think the problem that they've got is that the answer that they're getting back is, what is it you like? What is it you want? The iPad.
Oh, bloody hell.
What it is that I want is already out there.
I want the little shiny apple on the back. That's what I like, the little shiny apple.
It's a status symbol. They know they need one. They don't really know why.
I think that's 50% of the people. And I think the other 50% have figured out how to use it.
And it also seems like the ultimate toy for grown-ups. It's this magical blank slate that we don't know what it's good for. And it's, you know, everyone has, some people play games on it. Some people read the New York Times. Some people try to turn it into a business class machine. Some people make music on it. With GarageBand and everything. Yeah. So it's sort of like, it might be the mystique of a new toy, of something that actually is a shiny new thing that no one's had or owned or used before, combined with the massive brand recognition and quality and I guess you can say just the good public opinion that the consumers have about the Apple brand that they might not have with Acer or LG or Motorola.
In some respects, Apple has only really, I think it was like the iPod and the iPhone have built Apple's brand, and they've just got it at a golden moment. They've just clicked. Maybe, well, who knows what Apple are going to do next?
There's a point here in the chat room from Aaron who's saying that he'd read that the iPhone was in development after the iPad. The iPad came first.
Yeah, Steve Jobs actually said that.
Right.
That goes back to like almost 10 years ago. They had started doing that. He talked about like the rubber band scrolling, all that stuff that became the centerpieces of the iOS when it first came out. Originally, they had tried to develop that for tablets, and then when he saw what they could do, he said, "We should make this into a phone."
Right. Yeah.
That makes why they are so far ahead of everyone now.
Yes.
Mm. The iPad is just the perfect couch companion. You know, we used to be tied. We had to sit something on our lap. We hated that.
My wife?
You know, other than that, of course. It's a technology show. We used to set our laptops that we hated that. It burns our legs and what have you. It's not absolutely comfortable, right? So, it's my iPhone now because I no longer have the iPad because I needed a Mac. But I used to sit there with it, watch TV, the iPad. It's the perfect companion to take around the house. We're no longer tied to our desktop or our laptop on us. It's the lounging way to surf the net and do little things around the house.
Really. It's that childhood feel of just step out into the open air and just walk into the woods, walk into the behind your house and just like explore all day. You know, no rules, no obligation, of no expectation of what you're supposed to do or what you're supposed to find. It's the magical blank slate.
And when you get there, there's a cabin with three bears in it.
it's just struck me that's exactly what my wife does with her netbook. Of course, her netbook's just like a crap version of an iPad with a keyboard hanging off the back bottom of it, isn't it? She could probably do exactly what she does, except with an iPad. So, yeah, I know what you mean. I think there's a huge culmination of things which have become reached this golden moment. And you kind of wonder whether the other developers have got to think of something else. Let's just sod the tablet. Apple's got that laid down. Let's do something else that people want. And I don't think they've got any new ideas, really.
Oh, that's dangerous then, because there's just no competition.
Maybe some kind of a sphere. And you can move the apps around in this crystal ball kind of thing. Four dimensions.
We got four dimensions.
It's called Kinect. It's called Kinect, guys.
See,
that's true.
The problem that you've got is everything that you held up as being valid was things that were in Star Trek. And the problem that you've got now is that the things that are in Star Trek are actually Hackintoshes in comparison to what's currently out there as far as the iPad's concerned. There is no space innovation out there beyond what we've currently got as far as iPad's concerned. There's no tricorders to emulate and to work towards and that kind of stuff.
Just this afternoon, I was rerouting a power conduit and I was thinking the same thing.
Yes.
Let's boldly go where Apple has never gone
Jeffries
before.
Tube.
Yeah, Jeffrey.
A point here in the chat room. Anthony says that the iPad was in development when they created the Newton, which I find very surprising, but probably true. And Mac Jim wants to know if Sarah's drinking beer.
These are the important questions.
Of course, let's just stay away from the intelligent stuff. Right. The other thing then is the Interpol wanting global identity cards. The head of Interpol has emphasised the need for a global, verifiable electronic identity card system for migrant workers, an international forum on citizen ID projects, e-passports, border control management, and seeing up your back passage when you're walking down the street. So, what do we think? Do we want an identity card that's global?
No. I think it's the EU at the consumer level.
What, it was this hatred of the EU. Bugger off.
EU are you? No, I'll go one step further.
The EU are
UN.
Nazis.
It's the UN at the consumer level.
Can we stop talking about the EU like they're the Nazi party? Because it's starting to upset me.
I was going to say, actually, on a slightly different tack, Interpol needs something to do now. The Cold War has finished. They need to, and what they want to do is they're trying. In some respects, you're absolutely right, Carl. It is the UN. It is trying to get the policing of the world somehow, and they're trying. They're getting the easy wins to start with, I guess. Pick on the ones who have the least rights. The people who are in an alien environment and have. You know, let's not go for the organized crime. Let's not go for the drugs. Let's go for the easy ones, the individuals who really shouldn't be where they are, haven't got a decent explanation. You haven't got an ID card? Get out.
Well, let's ignore that for a minute, the international ideas and what organization it's coming from. I'm curious what you guys think of, you know, when it seems to me that it would be inevitable that we will eventually be identified on the internet, and maybe it would have to be country by country in terms of laws and what legal protections you have. But you know, we don't have anonymity now. This whole thing, which is a little too confusing for me to fully understand and talk about, but you know, the challenges to that weird 1986 law that's being talked about right now, and how the government is actually, the Department of Justice, I think, was saying that they don't want to change the law because they like that people have almost no privacy right now. It's extremely easy to find out who someone is, to track them, to find out on a person by person basis, and to subpoena and get their information. You know, we don't have that anonymity, but we may be really losing out on things, some features that having a actual identity on the web might bring. So what do you think about that? I mean, I was thinking at first, you know, maybe it would be sort of this kind of open source kind of thing, in the same way as like a Facebook login or a Google login, that's this ubiquitous identity that you can carry with you wherever you go. But maybe it's important to have, maybe it does need to be sanctioned or in some way tied in with the government in order to provide additional protections that your real life identity has from theft and impersonation that we don't quite yet have on the internet.
So again,
you don't really have them in real life. I think that comes with that. As soon as you start doing that, you bring with it a massive burden of responsibility on somebody. And you, as soon as you start, I think actually the disparate nature of the internet is a really good thing, because nobody can grab hold of somebody's identity. And as soon as you start to coalesce that into one thing, it becomes a very dangerous thing. I created my about.me profile, which kind of links to my blog and to my Facebook and to my Twitter. And I think to myself, actually, do I want to do that? Do I want to give somebody the opportunity to hack in? And obviously, they haven't got the passwords to all my blogs and things like that. But it's a central point of somebody to be able to know, to identify me. And I'm not entirely sure I trust anybody enough to do that, except perhaps my wife and Kyle.
James the Jackal Heart.
Oh yeah.
James, I agree with you that privacy and the potential to be hacked is probably the biggest problem facing such an idea. But I would also say, you know, I also kind of feel like in many ways we're already down to just like two or three logins for the web. If it's not our Facebook, it's our Google or it's our Twitter. And those are what we use to log into every other website.
So would you suggest having something like OpenID?
We've got one of those somewhere.
No, I didn't say OpenID. Or were you thinking more along the lines of something like OpenID?
Well, no, absolutely. Eric. But the fact is there isn't anything with with those sort of things, you've got to establish a brand with them to make sure they're recognised. And unfortunately, commercial companies are the best ones at implementing them. OpenID is a brilliant idea, and I really like it because it does make it portable, especially, and it does make it customizable. But people, it takes people who know about it to be able to use it. And I think...
I agree. I mean, you know, if you tie it up with a domain that you own, that's pretty rock solid.
Well, maybe you should do a test before you can use the internet.
It's part of the problem, the fact that actually in real life is where most of us actually exist to the least degree.
True.
I mean, how many conversations do I have per day on Twitter versus with actually real people? Being as a self-employed person who does an awful lot of work on the Bagel Tech Network, sat in an office by myself, I'm, in terms of real social interaction, I'm actually a bit of a hermit. Most of my social interaction now is electronic. So that like you're saying, you know, that someone bumping you over the head and stealing your car is actually probably the least of your worries. It is someone getting to you online, finding your single identity, because Twitter now triggers everything. It triggers Facebook, it triggers Amazon. You know, how many people have got passwords that are concurrent across the entire net process? And what is there to actually distinct that person from someone else? When someone turns up in Mogadishu and says, "Hi, my name's Ewan Rankin," at least if there was a global ID card, they'd go, "Show me your global ID card," because I've got my global ID card.
Well, this is the thing I particularly like about OpenID, Ewan, because that means that no one provider or site that you go to, if everyone allowed OpenID to work, the only one that controls it is the one that you actually set up, which can be yourself if you wanted to, if you use your own domain.
Mm.
Ewan, what you just...
Go ahead, Carl.
I was just going to say, what you just said there is actually very depressing.
We're all hermits.
Yeah, we're all hermits. We're in our rooms. We do our little things all day long. We converse with people on Twitter and over Skype, and we have no real lives.
That's okay.
It's kind of depressing. No. I mean, I like the idea. To me, as consumers, we've already chosen what we want to do, right? We have the Facebook thing now. We log in with Twitter now. We do all this now. We've chosen about being either exposed on the internet or not being exposed. To me, we're in a time now where you either do it or you grow a beard, you move into a cabin somewhere high in Colorado, and that's the only way you're going to be off the grid now. That's just the way the world works now.
Yeah, I think actually, yes, there are gradients of that. I was just thinking about the whole hermit thing. I don't think we are. I think actually, what actually happens is we'll be holding our laptops, our iPhones, our iPads while we're watching telly. So we'll be having a kind of a personal experience with what's going on, and we'll be communicating with other people. So we're not being hermits, but we're not being social. It's a kind of different type of sociology. But it's the whole going up into a mountain in Colorado is complete isolation in every sense of the word. The people you're mixing with online, apart from the people who can contact you, out of the blue without any sort of invitation, they're the ones you kind of want to watch. The rest of the community you're building around you can generally be, to some extent, trusted.
Well, here's the interesting question for you guys. As people who, you know, three of you have never met me. Sarah has twice.
Bad luck.
But three of you have never met me. Have you thought about how you would greet me if I knocked your door?
With a bottle of beer.
You would hide. Thanks, mate.
I would say, how do you know where I live?
No.
I mean, I just give you a can of beer. There you go.
No, but I mean, nice. do we shake hands? Do we say hello? Do we hug? You know, I mean,
how intimately do you know your online people? Well, I actually really enjoy meeting people I originally found on the. I mean, It's 1998, I think. I had my first kind of encounter where I met somebody, and it was just like, oh, I'm going to be at that railway station that time as well. We might as well just go and have a coffee. And it was really interesting because actually I realized at that point that I didn't know them at all. But no. There are some people who you can meet and see every day, colleagues you work with, people you go to, you know, you'll catch a train with every day, who you don't know at all and still nod and smile at. So, you know, it's just different flavors of the same thing, really.
But part of the whole thing of meeting somebody is not just sizing them up mentally and verbally. It's sizing them up physically. you look around their characteristic traits physically and make decisions about, you know, the pheromones and all the smells that come from them, those kind of things are all part of making a decision about a person.
Are you suggesting you're going to beat me up?
No.
Are you suggesting you're going to come on to me?
Maybe. You're too skinny for me, James. No, the point is that there's a lot of other things that go into liking or disliking a person, and just sharing the same political views, the same technological agendas, you know, those kind of things that we discuss on Twitter make up an enormous minuscule part of an enormous process of weighing up another person when meet them. We haven't done any of that.
I was going to say, is that the old way of thinking now? I mean, how it used to be.
It's the natural history way of thinking.
I'm not sure where you're going with this. I'm not sure where this is tying into what we had started talking about.
We started talking about...
We completely went off in left field, but that's okay.
No, I don't know that we did. What I was saying was that, you know, I exist and coexist with people online more than I do in the physical world. So my presence online dictates that, actually, I probably won't go to a lot of places and interact with people in the future. You know, if Bagel Tech becomes something that I end up having to do full-time, then I'll be sat in this office for most of the day and night for weeks on end. So my social interaction is with... the net. It is with Facebook, it is with Twitter, and it is with the people that are sat in the chat room now. And when you get to the stage of thinking about it logically, at some point you would call these people mates or friends or acquaintances, yet you've never acquainted with them. You've never actually sat and talked with them, even on the phone, let alone, you know, face to face. And we're talking this week, you know, someone's made a suggestion about having a Bagel Tech bash this summer, and I'm in, definitely. That'd be great. It'd be fabulous to meet all the people that listen to the show. And there's a bit of me sitting there thinking, we'd probably all sit there swallowing our beer and looking down into it thinking, God, I don't know how to talk to this person. Because I'm fine, you know, we all sit there tweeting at each other.
I don't think that's true at all. I've had some really interesting times. And actually, the art of conversation is finding out what you've got in common with somebody. And actually, you already got that. You've broken the ice on Twitter and things like that.
Yeah,
and
I was going to say
only,
that.
The only slight problem is they may be really annoying in real life, which is why I probably shouldn't come to your bash because I am.
But finishing off my sentence...
Yeah, because you and I feel like you...
Let me finish my sentence. The finished sentence is, the sentence finishes with, so therefore, an identity card would protect me because I rarely leave here. No one ever meets me. No one knows what I look like at a distance. And even though I look at your faces in two dimensions each week, I'm not sure whether I'd pick you out from a crowded room. Because, you know, there's something about the three-dimensional nature of people. If you look at newsreaders and then you meet them in the flesh, they don't look like they do on the TV at all.
It's the makeup.
It's the makeup, and it's the you're bigger than I thought you were. So when someone turns up in Mogadishu and says, I'm Ewan Rankin, no one actually knows. Even if they've known me on Skype or if they've known me on Twitter, no one would actually know that it was me, whereas a global ID card would say it was me or it wasn't me.
And that could, I guess, be connected to, for example, your credit card. So when your credit card got used in Mogadishu, they'd know it wasn't you.
Yeah, that's my point, is that I think this idea of a global identity card, we all sit and look at it and go, Big Brother, but the way that our lives have evolved is actually that we do need Big Brother, because we're not social beings anymore in the sense of physically going out and meeting people. We're social beings in the sense of doing it in the cloud
as well.
The thing is with this, though, is that, and I don't want to put a down on it, because I think what you're saying is actually makes it a perfectly valid work. It's maybe worthwhile actually doing. But when you look at any other kind of system that we've had, whether it's passports or whatever, what man can make, man can break. And, you know, there'll be forgeries and whatever. So why does it make it any more secure than anything else just because it's global?
I think physical identity cards have got better, though, in terms of forgeries. They're far more difficult to do. Credit cards are a lot more difficult to fake and scam now.
Why don't we just change the passport system? I mean, because we actually have it already. Just change the passport system.
Agreed. I think that's a superb way of doing it.
Well, you've got all these kind of like iris scanning and all that kind of stuff. You can get so much of somebody's physical data onto a smart card. Yeah, I can't see why they shouldn't. Yeah. Apart from the fact...
thumbprint.
Yeah.
Apart from the fact that you are still putting your identity into the hands of a government that you might not be able to trust.
because you and I, you know, I think I agree with you. You said people call it Big Brother, and that is what I've heard. I mean, there, yeah. I've read, you know, good opinions from good people who say that, like the worst thing in the world that could possibly happen to the internet is that, there is some kind of government, government released identification, for each person on the internet. And yet I wonder if that's really the case, because we've always had that in real life, whether it's passports, driver's license, social security yep. numbers, physical addresses, bank accounts, credit yep. card numbers. In the real world, we exist as a real person. And the more that our lives go electronic, whether it's, you know, the fact, you know, a lot of children are being born and grow up today who have never had a physical photo printed of themselves. You know, their parents have done it entirely electronically, videos, photos, and everything. Our lives are electronic. Every bit of communication, no one writes letters or anything. And so to the extent, you know, how do you, and maybe there are things, I don't really know the answer to this, but maybe there are facets of identity and identity theft and mail fraud and things and wiretapping protections that we don't have online. And certainly people like Facebook and Google opening up our privacy because we have accounts with each of them that are separate and that they own the rights to and own the rights to the media that we publish on their sites and host on places like YouTube. You know, Maybe we do need to unify it somehow. Unify and protect it.
If you type in Eric Lanigan, Ewan Rankin, Carl Swagger, James Hart, Sarah Gray into Google, you will get pictures of each of us. They will come up. And they will come from multiple sources, and people will know what we look like. And then if you tie into that, the fact that they get into that virtual calling card, James, you know, that central location that you were talking about where your bio sends you off to all the other places that you exist, that then becomes an extremely leveraging position for that person. They've got an enormous amount of influence and ability to start changing things and moving things. They can then start to think about, well, all the returns that I get, I'll look where all the returns are for the image of Ewan Rankin, and I'll put my picture in there and tag it as Ewan Rankin. And slowly, because I know about how Google search engines work and things like that, I'll start to replace Ewan Rankin's picture all over the place, and other Ewan Rankins will come up, and I won't even notice it, because when you type in Ewan Rankin, I'll go, oh, there's another Ewan Rankin in the world.
I'll be honest with you, that mountaintop home in Colorado is sounding better and better. Especially when you consider that the next war will be fought electronically. It will be fought online.
Yeah, and there's going to be lots of casualties.
It is already.
It's funny because I kind of agree with James. I feel like we're talking about Skynet right now and Mark Zuckerberg's the Terminator.
I love it when Eric's thinking about it. So he's kind of sitting rationalizing. His eyes are going all over the shop. He just sits square on and his eyes are rolling over the top of his head backwards and forwards.
Either that or he's just going, what the hell are these people on about?
Well, wait, so you and you made an interesting point, but about that someone could change their results. But what was your point about that? Was that a point for or against, you know, a universal identity?
For. Absolutely for. Okay. I think the idea, I mean, everyone's going to go, oh, Big Brother. But my point in all of this has always been, I ain't got a problem with it. I would rather have it than not have it, because I would rather have a situation whereby there was absolute proof that I was who I was and that there was no doubt to it. So when someone steals my identity and pops up somewhere and says, I'm Ewan Rankin, someone can go, well, unless you can produce your Interpol issued card and it's genuine and it goes through an RFID read and a physical scan and a digital watermark and a hologram tilty thing, I know it isn't you.
And a urine sample.
If they want it, they can have it. I piss enough to
oh no.
I went down that way.
I could give it back to the world. That's not an issue.
They can have DNA, honestly,
I don't care.
I honestly think it doesn't matter. We're in a time and age right now. We talk about piracy. We talk about copying. I think it's always going to be there. I think if you're Ewan Rankin, fine. I think if somebody wants to be Ewan Rankin, then fine. I think it's always going to be there.
I tend to disagree.
I wouldn't want to be you.
I firmly believe. I'm kind of not for it, honestly. I mean, I really feel like it's. I don't like the idea of Big Brother. You know, we already have enough in our lives of governments and everything else. I mean, to me, it sounds like a world identification system. Or what do we got next? A world government.
Kyle, are you against the idea of a universal ID for everybody, or that it be owned by the government?
Neither. Well, right now we're owned by the government. Our passports say that. Our driver's license in the States, we're owned by the state. I feel that there's more to lose by having everything, every single thing on an international scale than there is right now.
I think what's happened is that Interpol's being lobbied by a guy who makes identity cards, and he's got 6 billion blanks he can't get rid of. That's what's at the root of this.
You go, do it now before there are 7 billion people in the world.
Exactly. I've got enough at the moment.
Kyle, you brought up a very interesting point about copyright and intellectual property. And that's one of the reasons that I think a universal identity that is identifiable the same way that we are in the physical world, it will inevitably happen, whether it's through some kind of open source, very grassroots, open and free user movement, or whether it's handed down by the government, or it's some mixture of the two, with protections, but also freedoms. I think we may, as a society, have to move that way, because if you just look at how the disputes have arisen, and there doesn't seem to be any end to the distribution of media and ideas and things that are available on disk or on download, anytime that you can copy something an infinite number of times, make an infinite number of perfect copies, there's always these issues of digital rights management and who owns a copy of what and how do you distribute it and maintain it, and something we've never had as you. So there may be good reasons for the big guys, the big content owners, to favor a system where everyone could be easily identified and carry that identity with them, no matter what service they were using, no matter whether they downloaded from Apple or from iTunes or from Amazon store, you can port it around because you know that that's Eric Lanigan and that's the same guy with the same license, the same song or movie. But we as regular individuals may also benefit, because right now, whenever we post something to a YouTube or a photo to a Facebook or anywhere, we give up that unlimited worldwide use to that media, to that bit of media, or make a blog post. And if we could be identified as having our own identity that we can control and protect and host with whatever hosting provider is out there, analogous to like a domain name or a regular web server and web host, then you may have the ability to control your own intellectual property as well, the stuff that you make.
I agree with you to an extent on that, Eric. I do, and I think we are going to go that way. I don't think we're going to have a choice, because we probably have to. But ultimately, in the end, I think we're going to be right back where we are right now. We're going to have to worry about, did someone steal my identity? Where did you get it from? Boy, that's a hell of a copy you got there. It looks legitimate to me. You must be Eric Lanigan. You must be Kyle Swagger. And I really don't think, if we're talking about trying to resolve issues that we have now by claiming the identity as us, it might work for a year. And then I think we're going to be right back to square one. I think that problem, particularly in the electronic age and as we move forward, is always going to be there.
I think that was the point I was going to make, in that the topology of the internet as it is such that, and this is the internet, not the web, this is the internet as such, is that everything is so interconnected. You'd have to untangle it, and to do so would require somebody to moderate it and review it and govern it effectively. And as soon as you start governing online, the internet stops being what it used to be. And in some respects, the internet was always the whole thing about intellectual property on the internet is a kind of a difficult thing anyway, because the internet was conceived as something which was supposed to be free and open and sharing, and not obviously stuff was put down to get permission so you could actually open up something to gain permission to it. But as soon as you publish something, it stops being, it remains your property, but people can still take copies of it. And it sparks a whole philosophical debate as to what the internet is for and how you can control your content on it.
Mm.
Because it is impossible to do. It is impossible to control your content on the internet.
I think the point that Eric was saying there, though, is what the point was I was making, is that people are becoming digital. much as you've got digital content everywhere.
Well, that means they're becoming diluted.
Becoming
then.
Digital.
They're becoming diluted
because they exist in digital.
They're everywhere.
I agree. Everywhere and all the time, and never in one place.
And it makes sure the internet is all about.
Yeah, and eventually, the more that business gets done, the more that James, you said the idea about what the internet was originally supposed to be. A lot of people from back then thought that it was supposed to be just an open and free bulletin board system. But obviously, when you have people making enormous business transactions and storing every facet of their life and their business on it, then it starts to resemble a lot more into something that needs to be watched and regulated and protected in various ways.
Little do we know, the internet that we know and love for the last few years is out to destroy all of us.
Very good. Just before we get onto the cool thingies, a quick word from our sponsors, UK2.net. They are huge to us on this network. We did 1.2 terabytes of data last month. We've done 1.4 so far this month, and there's a few days left to go yet, unfortunately. And Mr. Inatco is coming back on the Mac Show on next Friday, so that could go a bit ballistic. We've warned UK2. They haven't listened, but we've warned them. And what was nice is that we lost 26,000 downloads of the Mac Show, which was over an hour in length, in 12 hours. They all went off the server and didn't fall over. So there's testament itself for UK2. There are supporters, which is one thing, but they're also a great hosting company, domain names, that kind of thing. They've got some special offers associated with BagelTech at the moment. There's one for VPS servers where you get a month free of charge. So if you go to BagelTechNews.com, there's a logo in the bottom corner for UK2. Click on that and it will take you to their main site. And then buy a VPS server if you like the idea of what they offer and use the offer code VPSBagel. And when you do, you're going to get 1 month free of charge off your VPS server, and they're reasonably priced to start with. And the other one is co-locations. So if you go to, again, the click through from us to the main site and then navigate through to co-location, you'll find that you can get a free iPad and a month free as well on the co-location service. So fantastic offers from UK2. They're our big sponsors. They really have saved our bacon this month and last month, and they're going to be doing it for a little while longer. So thank you very much, UK2. We'd be lost without you. Please use the click through, even if you're not going to buy anything. Just have a go with it. Have we got a cool thingy, James? Would you like to start?
I just very quickly just say congratulations. That was a fantastic Mac show last week. I listened to it and I could see why it was.
Thanks, mate.
Was it top 10 or something? It was number one, wasn't it, at one point?
Yeah, we were number one on Saturday, number one tech news show.
And it was a really, really compelling show. So well done to all the guys who were involved in that one.
Thanks, mate.
And you guys were here. My cool thingy. It's been a long time in coming. It is my favourite game. It's the sequel to my favourite game ever on the PC, which was just too brief to play. Portal 2 is coming. The most amazing thing about Portal 2 is that because Valve have made it and they have influences in so many other games that they've made, they're putting Easter eggs in those games to tempt people, to tease people, to make people... And so much of the stuff is hilarious. If you go to thinkwithportal.com, videos, there's all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, we've put it in the show notes and I've put it in the chat room, so we lost your audio there for a sec, mate, sorry.
I do apologise. Thinkwithportals.com really is amazing, and my kids have been laughing at the videos this evening because they are beautifully crafted. Really is funny.
Excellent choice,
killing people.
Excellent choice. Sarah, have you got a cool thingy for us?
Yes, I have, actually. It's an Android app, yet again. It seems to be coming a bit of a theme for me. But this one kind of speaks for itself. It's the BBC iPlayer for Android. Discovered it this week. I know I'm a bit behind the times, but being relatively new to
Android. Internet.
But yeah, very funny, Kyle. for those of you outside the UK, I'm sure most of you have probably heard of it, of the BBC iPlayer. If you haven't, it's the online service that allows people in the UK. Unfortunately, it's only in the UK, though I understand the BBC are looking at a commercial version for a worldwide audience for subscribers, that allows us to look at watch programs that have been recorded in the last 7 days. Although in some cases they do actually have series that where they will hold on to a whole series while it's being broadcast. Absolutely fantastic. As most of the TV and radio I listen to is actually BBC, this works really well for me. So, yeah, absolutely love it.
Excellent. Kyle, have you got a cool thingy for us?
Yeah, courtesy of you this week.
Yeah, you told me that.
Playing with a little thing called Timely.
That's the only thing I add.
What's that?
That's the only thing I add to use. And you stole it. I saw you typing it in.
Well, you stole my. You stole mine on the Mac show, so, you know.
Okay.
You could use that one again.
I could.
Well, we can make it both ours because you found it and I've been using it. I know you have too. It works really great, especially when you're in the time zone I'm in. You know, if you want to send out tweets during the daytime in the U.S., it works really great over here. It does have some limitations. You can't really schedule when you want your tweet to exactly go out. It kind of does it for you.
That kind of defeats the purpose, though, surely.
Well, it'd be nice to say I want 8:15, then I want the next one at 8:52, and you know these kind of things. But schedule a tweet 30 minutes.
But the idea of the application is to analyze when your users are going to receive it. It's not a sending program; it's a reception program, isn't it? It's looking for maximum reach for your tweets.
I suppose so. Well, I still want that feature, but it's not there. Anyways, sorry. That's what I want. That's what I want from it. You know, I want to do this. I want to plan my whole day. I don't have to be on my damn phone all day. Okay, this is great. Yeah, I just want it to sit up and do its thing. But it does work. There is a free thing out there because, you know, everybody knows I'm the cheapskate, so there is a free one. I find the pay a little too expensive. $20 a month I find a little ridiculous, or $199 a year. If they could bring that down a little bit.
For what it doesn't give you as well.
Yeah, for what it does for free, it does well. Timely.is is the place you can get that at. I've used it, though, and I like it, but it isn't worth $200 a year.
Okay. All right. Eric, would you like me to do mine and give you a little bit more time to think?
No, I actually have one that I just pulled from my shelf over there. Speaking of the history of the internet and its digital future, I would like to recommend a book called A History of the Internet and the Digital Future by Johnny Ryan. This is a brand new book that I just got. So I've only
Johnny
read the first
Ryan,
chapter.
Johnny Ryan, he came from the Bronx in New York. Hey.
Well, nice. Ironically, the guy is actually in Dublin.
That's nothing like.
It's Johnny Ryan.
Sound like this, then.
So, this is, I think it's kind of an independently published book because there's no audiobook edition of it or anything. And I think it's only available on Amazon. I think the author has some affiliation with Ars Technica, or they just really liked it or something, because they published three of the book chapters in full on Ars Technica. And so I started reading it there and it seemed interesting enough to check out. So I bought it and I've read the first chapter so far, and it certainly seems interesting so far. And it has a quote, an endorsement by Tim Wu, who authored that book I recommended last time, the Master Switch, talking about,
yes,
you know, who owns the internet and you know, all those kind of topics. So if you're interested, that's my pick.
Right, your homework is must try harder, Eric, to come with something. I saw your eyes scouting round with fear.
Actually, I like the pick. What's ironic
it sounds like a really interesting book.
It does, yeah. What's ironic about it, though, is that it has to do with the internet, and it's only available in paperback.
I know. But so again, the title is A History of the Internet and the Digital Future by Johnny Ryan.
Very
well,
good.
I think the best way to encapsulate that would be to get you to read it, Eric. Out to us.
Audible, yes. Man. Eric the Audible Actor.
Yep.
My pick is the Nikon D5100. We talked about it and looked at the reviews of this. It's come out this week, and the reviews have come out. And I've got to say, I mean, we had Alex and I had a bit of a discussion on it today during the photo show, and I've sat and looked at the specs all afternoon. And the thing that's got me thinking that this really is a cool thing is the fact that I've been sitting umming and ahhing whether to buy it all afternoon because I keep, I could, but that wouldn't. And any camera that's a Nikon, I'm a Canon man through and through. I got £20,000 worth of lenses. There's no way I'm going to jump ship in a heartbeat. But this camera's got me seriously thinking about buying a Nikon. It's 16 megapixels, so it's not stupid in size. And as long as the sensor's decent quality, and I'm assured by Alex that this is the D7000 sensor, which he rated when he had a play with it. So that's good enough for me as a recommendation. And then also, the next thing was it shoots 1080p video with autofocus as well. And it's got a flip-out screen as well for watching it, so you can do it at all kinds of angles. And the beauty with Nikon is as well that you can then get a 50mm prime lens that'll take you down to 1.4 on the f-stop, and it's only going to cost you about $150. So there's a lot of flexibility there. It's $799 to buy without a lens, $899 with a lens, £669 here. That's the best price for Jessops, and it's a serious camera. And if it's got the image quality, I'm going to go and have a play tomorrow at Jessops. If it's got the image quality, I may well buy it, and that's a big ask for someone who is so tuned into Canon as I currently am.
Looks like you're going to be cooking dinner for the next few nights.
No, I'll bring it in a bag, and then she'll say, "New camera." I'll go, "No, I've had it ages." That's what she does with shoes.
I was going to say that's that old trick.
Well, she does it with shoes. Why can't I do it with cameras? There you go.
Yeah. So.
Good luck to you.
You've got to have years of practicing that one, Ewan.
You might be on your own next week. Never mind. The other thing that we're going to talk about is the Bagel Tech Bash, because allegedly someone's had an idea for this, and I like it. On the 8th of July, we're 3 years old. That means the Daily Show will have been going for 3 years. And the 8th of July is a Friday, so we've got all the shows that we can do.
And it's also my birthday.
And
as
it's
well.
Also Sarah's birthday, which is
fantastic.
Rather lovely.
She's bringing the cake.
And someone suggested having a pig roast and a beer festival and that kind of stuff somewhere around here. And then someone suggested my local rugby club, which I think is a great idea because the beer's cheap behind the bar as well. And just getting together. So if you fancy doing it, drop me an email and say, yeah, you know, I'm not asking you to buy a ticket or anything. Just say, yeah, I'm going to come. There will be a ticket price, but it'll only to be to cover the costs of the basic stuff. And I'll chuck in the pig maybe or something like that. There we go. And we'll drink some beer and see if we can actually get along socially as real people rather than just existing on the net. So drop me a line at bageltechnews@gmail.com and say, yeah, I'd come. And that's, we'll get a list of numbers. And if we've only got 10 of us, then we won't bother. But if there's 50 or something like that, then we'll go ahead.
So as it's a Friday, are we going to broadcast with an audience?
We're
going to
broadcast from the rugby club. But the problem
with
an
audience.
Yes, but everyone has to come with a dongle so that we can, because there's not any internet down at the rugby club. So but there's good 3G connection. So if we've got a 3 dongle, a MiFi or something like that, and we can create 4 Wi-Fi hotspots, I could bring the whole Skype wall down and we could do it. Or we could just do it off one.
We need is a long Ethernet cable.
What, from my house? Yeah, it's 3 miles, must. So there's the other one. And the other thing is, if you've got some reviews for us, then I don't mind if they're good or bad. It's your choice. One guy described this show as waffle this week. That's his opinion. He's welcome to it. And if you want to give us a review, we'd really appreciate it. Stick it in iTunes, and it makes a difference to our rankings. And it means, you know, you stay up the charts. When you do go up, you stay up there longer if you've got a lot of reviews behind you. So there you go. Somewhere in the algorithm. Where can we get a hold of you, please, James?
SYZYGY, Syzygy, on Twitter. Thank you very much. I just got an email saying that Aaron's started following me. Hello, Aaron in the chat room, and thank you very much for the follow.
He buggered off a while back, mate, so.
He still follows me, and that's
tweeting.
Great.
It is.
He'll listen to it back.
Sarah, where can we get a hold of you?
You can get hold of me on my website, which is sarahjaneuk.com, or on Twitter at sarahjaneuk.
Yes, and you'll be very pleased to hear, Sarah, I've bitten the bullet and I've paid someone to redesign the website, as in just the visual look.
Oh, wow.
So there'll be a whole pile of work coming your way in a couple of weeks.
Great. Can we leave it till the end of May,
please? You said you were free until after Easter, so there we go.
I'm not going to be around for a while after that.
All right, okay. Oh, you're going to be in America, of course. Yes.
I am, yes.
If it all breaks down, you're going to take your laptop.
I will have my laptop with me.
Good.
She has a spare iPad.
Yes, that's coming too, actually.
Kyle, where can we get you?
Twitter.com/KyleSwagger, and of course, here on the Bagel Tech Network with the newly revamped, fast-paced media show.
Sounding good, mate. Listen to today. It's very good. When's the sound show coming back?
Don't ask.
Okay. And finally, Eric, where can we get a hold of you, mate?
My universal identity is just about everywhere. Eric Lanigan is the username on Twitter, and ericlanigan.com and YouTube and everywhere. ERIKLANIGAN.
The one thing that you've got to do, which will really scare the crap out of you, is Google usernames that you've used on previous sites. If you've picked like a silly name or something like that, Donkey Bob or you know, something that's really stupid, Google that and you'll be really shocked at the results you get back, because it ties it back to you very, very quickly. Or you might find your password on some of them as well, where it's been stolen.
What's that saying?
You are not Eric Lanigan. Don't you say that. He's stolen my identity.
Mr. Eric Lanigan now lives in Luton and wears a purple jumper.
And it's not true. That's not him.
Mute switch, old boy. Mute switch.
Again, the padded walls. That's it all.
Yeah.
These look like hoodies, but they're actually straitjackets.
Yes.
Where's the smoke detector?
Nice color, by the way, Eric.
We'll be back again next week with another Bagel Tech Big as normal, 10 p.m. UK time, which is 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 2 p.m. Pacific Time. So come and join us, pull up a chair, grab a beer and some pizza, and shoot the breeze with us on the week's tech news, because none of it's serious. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good weekend.